I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues. Robin, Mark,
Matt,
here to talk everything Bills with a UK twist. And guys, we're talking about defense this week. I mean, last week we went on about how this offense is going to change under Ken Dorsey with all the additions. Let's just switch it up. Let's go defense. Do we see anything? Will we see anything really different with this defense for this year? Obviously, other than the getting over the 13 seconds hump.
Scheme-wise, it's a bit different, isn't it? We're not talking about new coordinators in positions, which is quite nice. I think it's always good for the defense to stick with the same game plan. It's something that the offense has benefited from for the last couple of years. The major thing is the leveling up of the personnel, especially I think in terms of the front seven. That's where we're going to see the biggest change in performance. There's obviously one key standout name in particular that's going to hopefully make a massive difference, and we'll come on to that in a bit.
Jermaine Edwards. Yeah,
absolutely, that's the one I was talking about, yeah.
No, I mean, there have been some, okay, it's not personnel scheme-wise. Obviously, we still have Leslie Frazier, who I think, was it PFF, voted the number one defensive coach or defensive coordinator in their recent poll. Something
can't get an interview for a head coaching job to save his life. So hooray for racism.
Hey,
the Bills keep their DC for another year. And what a fantastic job he keeps doing. So
there's always
a silver lining to white supremacy, isn't there?
Yeah. Thank God the NFL clubs continue to be run by crusty old white men, eh? God bless America.
God, so yeah, exactly. It's really, really circling the drain, that country at the moment, isn't it?
Well, the NFL
can't be all bad.
And yeah, another podcast you may know, a little one called the NFL Long Snapper podcast. You may have heard of. Someone I know is on that one, and we also Leslie Frazier was our coordinator of the year.
Handed to him. I think what he's done, okay, you have to think that McDermott has a bit of a say in it. Obviously, we know back in the day that he took away the play calling duties initially from Leslie Frazier, to then just obviously Frazier then gets his trust back and actually pretty much is the main guy in charge. But you can see how McDermott wants to approach the defense and how Frazier, in a way, is almost like adapted, but still kept true to how he's always called defenses. I don't know if what's that, but I mean, you're looking at it. I mean, we've had changes. We've got coaching changes itself. I'm just trying to see what it is. They had, who they've just recently had? They've revamped the whole, or some of the defensive. They've got, like, John Butler as the DB's coach, who's now the passing game coordinator for the defense. Bob Babich, his son, actually took over from him for the linebackers, and then... Was it?
He handed over the linebacker coaching job to his son, or rather, it was taken over by his son. So really is a family business, isn't it?
Yeah, Bob Babich went from safeties coach to linebackers coach to take over from his father. Jim Salgado moved from the nickel coach to safeties coach. John Butler added passing game coordinator to his defensive backs coach. And then they've just had a couple of defensive quality control coaches.
But
and
I mean, it's
Marcus
like,
West, defensive line coordinator.
I'd like to think that it's not going to make a huge amount of difference to the scheme that we're playing, is it? It's Leslie Frazier's defense, regardless of who sat behind him. And I don't think it ever hurts to refresh the voices that the players are hearing, like who's in charge of their individual rooms isn't necessarily a bad thing. Especially if they're trying to, level up a little bit in certain areas. But it's ultimately the scheme stays mostly the same.
Yeah. I mean, it's continuity. Even though some people have been promoted, can you call it promoted if you go sideways?
No.
No, you don't. No.
Some of them, obviously, okay, from safety.
They've restructured somewhat.
You could make the progression argument. Yeah. I've worked in organisations that had lots of progression. I've worked in organisations where, you know, part-timers became full-timers and then became core loggers and became first line and then second line and then third line. There's a very good friend of mine who did that. And those organisations usually do very well for what else that can be said. I've also worked in organisations where no one moved and everyone did the same thing every day and it got stale and boring. So for all that can be said about continuity, the fact that you do have new people coming in, and as Mark said about, you know, you do want to keep the voices and perhaps change the voices going into the years, you want to have that balance between keeping the fundamentals the same, so we're still a 4-3 defense, or do you know, anyone remember Rex Ryan shifting out a load of guys and switching to a 3-4 and then having to go through it all and then go all the way back to a 4-3 again? Oh god, what a mess. You know, you keep the basics the same, but you keep people flowing through that system to keep it fresh.
Yeah, I mean, say even though they've gone from different positions, some of them obviously, in the case of Salgado's gone from nickel to safety and all that. You have got that continuity where they already know the system. They're just going to be teaching a different position. But you still know exactly what the role is and how you're going to work it under a Leslie Frazier defense. And with the roster turnover we've had, especially on that defensive line, we could see a little bit more, say, excitement, to be honest, to this defense. Because, to be honest, we weren't that good in sacks last year, were we?
I think it's really interesting because yes, it's strange because the Bills' conventional wisdom about what makes a defense brilliant is, you know, getting to the quarterback, right? And like how many sacks you get. It's one of those things that everybody looks at. And the Bills, I think a lot of the time flew under the radar a little bit last season when it came to their D. It wasn't something, maybe because of how high octane the offense is, it doesn't get spoken about quite a lot. And you might think that it's quite an average defense. And usually you think it's all about blitzing, right? It's how often you get after the quarterback, is how much you attack them. The Buccaneers, they blitz almost like 50% of their plays are blitzing. The Bills ranked number one in NFL hurries last season on defense, and zero teams generated more pressure than the Bills. Over 30% of their snaps, they generated pressure, but we ranked 26th in the league in the amount that we blitzed. So we don't do it a lot, but we still get pressure on the quarterback. So it's going to be interesting to see how that changes with the addition, as you rightly said, on the defensive line. Do we blitz more? I don't think it's Leslie Frazier's way. I think he's quite almost a coverage sack kind of guy. What we maybe lacked was the open field tackling ability. You look at specifically the Kansas City game. We got a lot of pressure on Mahomes. What we didn't get was getting down. And maybe that's where some of the additions make the difference.
Yeah. Well, how did Tampa Bay beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl? They got pressure with four guys, didn't they? How did the Bengals get past the Chiefs in the championship game? I think they dropped, most of the time they were dropping like eight into coverage, but they were still causing Mahomes trouble with three. As you say, I think that's going to be the difference, is can you get the pressure with four guys coming through rather than, you know, the five or the six?
I think it asks the question. Asks the question. Obviously, every team and every defense sometimes are talked about how well they are judging by sacks. But is it really the age-old question? Is it the pass rush that's actually causing this defense to do so well, or is it the fact that you have that secondary, you have that pass rush or pass coverage game, which is out there the best and probably been the best for the last few years in the NFL, that really allowing the sacks to actually come in. And where were we ranked? We were ranked, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and about 10th or 11th in sacks with 42 last season. Do you put that down?
Don't forget, though, that teams don't pass on us a lot. Or they stopped passing on us a lot because we were so good against it. We, true, in terms of passing yards, we were first in the NFL with the amount allowed. The yards thrown against us through the air was we were ranked best in the NFL. Yards after the catch, our defense was ranked best in the NFL. We only allowed something like the fewest passing touchdowns against us. And so many more than even in second place. There's probably an element of it that people stop thinking, we can't pass against this team, let's run. And so you can't get sacks if people aren't dropping back.
Mm. So I'm just, it answers that question. I mean, looking at what we've added, and in a bit we're going to go with position on comparing them to last year, the additions that we've actually made, I mean, obviously you've got the big name in Von Miller. You've got Tim Settle, you've got Daquan Jones, we brought back Shaq Lawson, Jordan Phillips come back. Who else have we added new signings on that offensive line?
There's that chap someone named that we were definitely going to draft called Kyra Lamb. He's in there as well. Can't remember who it was that said it was going to pick
wild,
it.
Wasn't
Matt. Definitely wasn't Matt.
Matt was first on the board on that one. Matt was saying it ages ago.
We'll listen to the tape and check that, shall
we? get back all the way back to January and you'll find out.
It's a big turnover. A lot of those names you mentioned there are going to be, I think, starters. I think there's an argument that Daquan Jones, Shaq Lawson, Von Miller, and Kyra Lamb, four of our 11, are all starting players, I think.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. I mean, we know Sean McDermott preaches rotation on that front. On that front four, at least on that defensive line, and you mix and match like Basham, Phillips, Oliver, and let's say Von Miller or Russo, Settle, Jones, and Von Miller. You've got guys that are going to really make an impact on there. You've got so many chess pieces really on that defensive line that. Yes, we're going to have Trey White out for probably a first month or two into the season. But if you can rotate and get pressure from any of those 8 or 9 defensive linemen on there, then we really won't have anything to worry about too much in the secondary on the boundary. As we know, we've got obviously the best safety duo probably in the NFL, and obviously probably the best nickel corner. A bit in the NFL to actually back up Elam and will most likely be Dane Jackson until he comes back.
Sorry,
Karen. Oh no, I was going to say it's going to be just as well, because if you're going to nitpick the cornerback position, I don't think it's going to be a huge issue, but having an improved pass rush, having an improved defensive line is, as you say, going to take the pressure off the cornerback position, which is just as well, because an interesting stat for you, and I do like them, if you take out Trey, just for the moment, and say he's out for the month, the two most experienced cornerbacks that we have, we've got a pretty large cornerback room, is Taron Johnson and Saran Neal with 5 years.
Those
are the two most experienced ones that we've had. We've had Dane Jackson for a couple of years, been quite good. Kyrie Lamb's going to come into that. You don't want to get carried away. He's going to have some plays. He's going to make some splash plays. I remember Stephon Gilmore's first year with much heralded cornerback, did really well, but you know, got found out a couple of times as well. It's probably just as well that the pass rush is hopefully going to be improved, because I think. the support that the cornerback position might need could come in handy.
Yeah. And I say, they've had a bit of experience in there with Tim Harris on there. And I think, if I'm rightly thinking, I mean, I think we're like a, what was it? We're not even at 90 for training camp at the moment. But there are still, if they're actually worried about Trey White's situation, yes, as I say, Dane Jackson, for a seventh round pick when he's come in, he's been a very under the radar guy on there when he actually filled in. I mean, both him and Wallace did not look out of place.
Yeah.
No. When Trey White was out, I think, as I said on here,
I was a big Levi Wallace fan. I think you look at his stats in terms of like what he delivers on the pitch. He's quite a money ball kind of guy. You know, he's not a name, but consistently, people don't have much joy when they throw to him. He's, he gets on base, and I think he's going to be. He's a loss to the Steelers. It's a shame you couldn't hang on to him, but
he's the most. Sorry, Mark.
No, you carry on.
No, I was going to say, just to chime in on that, I thought Levi Wallace is one of those perfect, almost archetypal good news stories of the NFL. A guy undrafted, signed to a practice squad. Anyone want to guess? Because I looked that up early this evening. Anyone want to guess how much he was paid in that first season when he was signed to the practice squad?
Like
60 grand?
Less than half a million.
Mark, you're really close. $68,000. Yeah. $68,000. Got a bonus when he got onto the squad for about 200. I've got it in front of me somewhere. Yeah, got 225,000 when he got onto the active roster. And once he was on the active roster, he went played that week that he was activated, and never gave that position up. Played on the team until the end of the 2021 season. And
that was
this
good.
This year for the Steelers, he's going to earn $4 million.
Fair play to him.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good luck. Good luck to the guy. You earned it, buddy.
Yeah. Good luck. Mm.
Yeah. No. I mean, I have no ill wish. I mean, if it was just what the basis of the of what was it shorts he was wearing.
That decided when we come back to play the Steelers, we're still booing. I mean, that's just the way it goes. You know, give him a big round of applause. Big round of applause when we see him. Boo him every other time he gets it.
Absolutely right.
So let's move. Let's do this. Let's do 2021 versus 2022 positional reviews, and we'll start with. Let's start with the whole of the defensive, the front seven, of the defensive line. I mean, 2021, we had Ed Oliver, AJ Epinesa, Brandon Bryant, Boogie Basham, Greg Russo, Jerry Hughes, Mario Addison, Justin Zimmer, Harrison Phillips, Star Lutelele, Vernon Butler, Eli Anku. And this year, in that defensive line, we've got, take a deep breath, Eli Anku, we've got Boogie Basham, we've got CJ Brewer, a rookie that we actually signed, Brandon Bryant, we've got Prince Emile, another rookie, AJ Epinesa, you've got nice linebacker. Where are we going? You got Kingsley Jonathan, which is another rookie. Daquan Jones, obviously Von Miller, Shaq Lawson, Jordan Phillips, Mike Love. Some of these are practice squad guys last year. Obviously Ed Oliver. Did I miss anyone? Russo, Settle. I think that's it, isn't it? Have I missed anyone else out?
Pretty much everybody, yeah. I think that's pretty much where we are. This is a big addition, a big upgrade for me here. I liked, so if we're looking just at starters, Ed Oliver still being around is great. Greg Russo still being around is great. They're both for me. That's the left side of our front four lockdown dead chunk for that. Right side is the new one, and this is where we've made some big additions. I think for me, really, it was Jerry Hughes is clearly the big one that started a lot last year that's no longer with us. I massive Jerry Hughes fan, gutted that he gutted that he's gone. But I don't think there's any denying that he was a step slower and less effective last year. It felt like the right time to move on. I'm pleased that we didn't hang on to him for one more year and we saw like real decline, which I think is what we may see out of him this season. I think that's getting someone else in to come and play on the other end is great. It's likely that will be Shaq Lawson. It may be Von Miller who starts there, because we did that quite a lot last year, that we had the sort of the side linebacker almost playing as one of the defensive ends. So I think we'll probably see that quite a lot. And then the two linebackers of Edmonds and Matt Milano still being as they were. And then Daquan Jones, I think, is probably going to be a starter for us. And I think that's an upgrade based on, if you look at the defensive tackles that we had last year, we kind of flip-flopped between Harrison Phillips and Star Lutalele. I think Daquan Jones is an upgrade on both of them. Disappointed that they're not around anymore, but I think Daquan Jones is a step up for me.
Yeah, I mean, you can't argue, Robin, about the inclusion of Jordan Phillips back in there as a one tech. I mean, in his time, in his only time with Buffalo was two times with Buffalo. What is it? He's actually had 9.5 sacks in his last season from a guy that weighs nearly 341 pounds, but is a guy that really is definitely, in my opinion, a huge upgrade over what Star can be done. And I know in that year, I don't think we really let that much run on us with Phillips in that middle, and we know he's got that pass rush ability more than what Star brought. But we know, again, Star brought that big run-stopping defense, what he was actually famed for.
Yeah. Well, Star never quite recovered, did he, from the 2020 season? He came back in 2021 and he was still there, but I don't think he wasn't quite the player he was. And McDermott, like the best coaches, has that heart of stone that's just able to get players to move on. Yeah. I know it's offense, but John Brown probably moved on at the right time. You know, Jerry Hughes, as Mark says, probably moved on at the right time. Star Lutalele probably moved on at the right time. You know, we've had four fairly significant players leave from the defensive line, but I don't think we've really. And this obviously goes without saying that they gel and they fit in and it's a new team for them. But certainly on paper and certainly personnel wise, they all look to give the Bills more options and more production than what happened before. So I just like to make two points real quick. One of my favourite people whose opinions I take very seriously on the Bills is a guy called Bruce Nolan, and he's very, very big on Daquan Jones, and he's saying, yes, of course, Von Miller, the most talented addition, but strictly schematically speaking, Daquan Jones may have the biggest impact because the Bills haven't had a two-gap one tackle for quite a while. And that changes your options, because if you're blocking two gaps, one tackle, there's so much more that you can then do. The only other point I was just gonna make, I was trying to get a sense, because I've heard numbers thrown around about development time for defensive ends, development time for pass rushers. We all know about Von Miller's, his school that he runs in the off season. I was absolutely stunned when I read this, because I couldn't quite believe it, but I double checked it. Rousseau is 22. Espinosa, which I can understand, is 23. The average development time of a defensive end, give or take, is about 5 years. The peak begins at 26. Shaq Lawson, who feels like he's been around forever, is only 28. With Von Miller, assuming they develop the way they have, Basham is 24. You've got three players there that are coming into their peak, and they've got Von Miller to learn from for at the very least the next two or three years.
Yeah, it's a really, really good point. It's a really, really good point that, and I think it definitely can't be understated that it's a very, very good line, but it's young.
Yeah.
And it's adding that experience of Von Miller and what he can teach them. I think it's a really, really good point. It was almost, not far off legendary defense last year. We've made it better, but it's young and it's only going to improve.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, everyone's high on Daquan Jones. I think him and Jordan Phillips in that one tank is probably going to be, probably Phillips a bit more one tech on there, probably be one of the better two-for-one upgrade on Stark. I'm just looking at the last 3 years, Jordan Phillips's stats. Obviously, 9.5 sacks for us in 2019, 2 sacks 2020 with Arizona, and 3 last year with Arizona. Solo tackles, 25 with the Bills in 2019, 10, 14 with the Arizona. Tackles for a loss, 13 with the Bills, 1 and 3 with Arizona, 16 quarterback hits with the Bills, 3 and 4 with Arizona. And in the same 3-year stretch, obviously, with Daquan Jones, he probably played in a different scheme, so to speak, at Tennessee, where he was more of they were playing more 3 at the front, so he was playing more true nose. And in Carolina, he was playing, obviously, defensive tackle. He had 1 sack in 2019, 2 sacks in 2020, both at Tennessee, 1 sack with Carolina. But the interesting thing is solo tackles, 2019, 21, 2020, 29, 2021, 19. So you've got guys in there that are actually going to really get up in the grill. And I think that's going to open it up, as most people have said, for Ed Oliver, for the edge guys, because you've got to somehow double team one guy, which most likely be Von Miller. You've got 3 other guys plus the 2 linebackers that you've got to try and block. Or if you try and double team Ed Oliver, you've got, or say, Jordan Phillips or Jaquan Jones on that pass rush, you've still got the edge guys and more. So I think, like Mark, this is a completely good upgrade and probably the best upgrade we've actually done in this on the roster this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on that. It's huge upgrade. Von Miller, obviously, technically a linebacker, but will probably play end quite a lot as we've done a huge amount over the last couple of years. It makes a massive difference, but just some of the other positions, and as Robin very rightly says, the players that have been there, I'm so excited about Rousseau and what he can become as a dominant defensive end. Just the sheer size of the guy, that pick towards the end of the first round in the last draft looks like a real, real good bit of business.
Yeah. I mean, it's one name we've even forgotten from last year was Efi Obada. He's gone to Washington, which I kind of...
Unlucky.
Yeah, I'm kind of unlucky, but I think we could have at least kept him on, because for a guy last year, 3.5 sacks, which was second or third the Bills, 8 solo tackles, 4 assisted, 2 tackle for loss, 8 quarterbacks hits. So you've got a guy here that in limited snaps actually has become very productive and was productive in the previous 2 years with Carolina. So That's my one regret, that we didn't actually make a play for him.
How many make the 53? How many D linemen? Is there a sort of an agreed figure? What is it? 8, 9, maybe?
I think it's about 9, sometimes 10, I think.
And that includes ends and tackles. So when you're lining up on game day, usually you may have 2 tackles, 2 ends. So if you have a backup for each position, there's your 8. It sounds like a lot, but actually you very quickly run out of names, don't you, when you go at Oliver.
And I suspect a lot of it was nominally, I think Efe Abada is as much lining up a linebacker. He only started one game. The position group, because we only really play two main linebackers in the lineup, the chances for him were slim, and the money needs to go elsewhere. I'd love to have kept him though, because actually I think he was it was nice to have him around, and the fact that he was a Brit kind of helps as well.
Oh, sure.
So let's move on to the linebacker position. I mean, last year we had Matt Milano, Andre Smith, Tyler Matakevich, AJ Klein, Tremaine Edmonds, Joe Gerald Harris, and Tyrell Dodson. This year we have got
much the same.
But rookie Terrell Bernard. We've got Tyrell Dodson. We've got Tremaine Edmonds. We've got Joe Gerald Harris. We've got where are we going? Let's go. I'll go through this a lot.
Baden Spector. We picked up two linebackers, didn't we, in the draft?
Yeah, we got Markwell Lee.
Baden Spector near the end.
Yeah.
Markwell Lee, Tyler Matakevich. I've just said that right person previously. Matt Milano.
And there's this one other guy. You might have heard of him.
Yeah.
Baden Spector.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking. That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah, there's one other guy that we picked up in free agency. I can't remember his name. It's pretty good, I think. Yeah. What's he called?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Tell me, come on.
Vincent or something, Vic.
Yeah. Something like that. It starts with V.
Yeah.
Well, I classed him as a defensive end.
No, I think he's...
Okay, we'll stick him both.
Yeah, that's it. It's kind of the... What we've done a lot in the last couple of years is play that side linebacker as an end. So I think he will rotate in as much as kind of like a right defensive end / potential linebacker and flip-flop in between those two positions. But Von Miller, linebacker / end, That's the key highlight, because it's, you know, we all know it's going to be Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds starting as our linebackers. I think this is depending on what you, in terms of upgrading the room, if you're counting Von Miller as a linebacker, then it's a massive upgrade. If you're counting him as a defensive end, then it's pretty much, you know, potato potato, and it's pretty much the same room except for a couple of rookies who may or may not make the roster. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, we know Andre Smith's missing the first six games. Got a suspension for I don't know exactly what it was he got suspended for, but he was obviously using illegal
So do you think there's a chance that he gets, so is, probably, is that, does that mean he's getting cut?
Possibly. I think so, unless they put him on. But I don't know.
If they take what, four, five linebackers? You've got Milano, that you've got, then maybe Dodson and Bernard. You're almost there. If Spector has a good camp, maybe he's your fifth.
But yeah, Matakevich was there last season. I think you're probably looking at six, maybe. Milano, Edmonds, Miller, Bernard, Dodson and Matakevich. And then you're looking at kind of the rookies, Markwell Lee and Baylen Spector. And if they have a really good camp, then they might make it. Probably practice squad, I would think.
I mean, the one question I think this season's going to answer is Tremaine Edmonds, and that is, will he do enough, and will they sign him to that extension? Because we all know that Bill's Twitter, everyone's on the air, everyone's got a different view on Tremaine Edmonds.
Yeah.
I mean, is it a case that they could let him walk, or do you think now with you talk of him as like a Josh Allen of the defense, the fact that they've now put those pieces around him with Shaq Lawson, with Von Miller, with Jordan Phillips, Daquan Jones, and all that operating out of the on the defensive line, that he actually then explodes and shows what he really can do? Or is it a case of he's going to have a so-so campaign and they'll probably let him walk?
Yeah.
Or option C, he has a so-so campaign and they bring him back, but they get him at a much cheaper rate. Because if he has a really good year five, then they have to pay him serious money, something, you know, on or about what they're paying Milano, or maybe more. But if he has a less successful season, then I suppose you're not signing as good a player. I remain very optimistic about a guy who has still only just turned 24.
Yeah.
I think he's still got potentially another 10 years. But should we have seen more of him by now? He seems to be looking good going forward, but not so much when he's running back.
To me, he was better his first couple of years. If anything, we're seeing a regression for him than it should be as part of that development 5 years. He should be going the other way. I just don't think he is. I would love him to prove me wrong, and he has a world class season. I just can't see it personally. Mm. I have a sneaky suspicion that this is going to be his final year as a Bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an interesting one. I say it's a topic of debate. I mean, we stick it out there in the Bills Mafia universe, and obviously hit us up on Twitter and socials if you think what your opinions are of Tremaine Edmonds. I mean,
Matt Milano is a fifth round pick and has outplayed him.
Yeah, yes. I mean he's 24. He came in as the youngest ever, pretty much the youngest ever player to play NFL when he first in his first season. On there, he's captain. Is what 19 when he actually played his first game in the NFL.
Yeah. Very young.
And yet you should expect to see that growth in him, but I don't know whether it was the fact that it was the players around him at the time, and now we see him go a little bit up going forward or not. He's one of what you'd like to call an enigma, really. Mm. Or as Forrest Gump says, like a box of chocolates. You never know which one you're going to get.
Good look at the picture on the inside of the lid. That'll tell you what you're going to get. But I mean, always annoyed me, that phrase. Just wanted to point that out. You took your own the box. There's a little picture of the chocolate and it tells you what it is.
But yeah, that's true. But then you look.
Why do they put it on the bottom though? They always put it on the bottom, and then you have to like hold it like that so you can't see.
Oh, guys, it's like a Wi-Fi password on the router, isn't it?
Yeah, why
put it on
do
the
that?
Front?
Yeah,
front of the box. Upside down.
Put it on the box. Have it there, and then you can see, and then you go, "Oh, I want one of them." Lift it up, and there it is. Or put it on like underneath the actual chocolate. Yeah, far better. Anyway.
Yeah. No. Exactly. I mean, going back, if you look at this, probably another reason how it might factor in with Edmonds. If you look at his first season, two interceptions, two sacks, 121 combined tackles, 80 solo, 5 tackle for losses, 7 quarterback hits. 2018, his first season. 2019, 1 interception, 1.5 sacks, going down 115 combined, 66 solo. Tackle for losses 10, quarterback hits 4, safeties 1. 2020, no interceptions, 2 sacks, 119 combined, 77 solo, 4 tackle for losses, 3 quarterback hits. And last year, 1 interception, no sacks, 108 combined tackles, 70 solo, 7 tackle for loss, 1 quarterback hit. Is that really a play that you want to give a big contract to for your defender, for a middle linebacker, your captain of your thing? And if you compare it to naming the top linebacker from last year, what was it? We're looking at Devin White, right?
NFL wise, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So if we compare him to Devin White, at least for the last 3 years, because I know Devin White came in 2019. So you're looking at what he's done. Let's get rid of you. You're looking at what he's done, and he plays more middle linebacker than anything. Sometimes they will shift him out. In 2019, 1 interception, 2.5 sacks, recovered 4 fumbles or forced fumbles, 4 recoveries, 2 touchdowns for that. Only 91 combined, 4 tackle for losses, 5 quarterback hits. That's his first year. That's his rookie year. 2020, no interceptions, 9 sacks, 140 combined, 97 solo, 15 tackle for losses, 16 quarterback hits. And last year, no interceptions, 3.5 sacks, 128 combined, 87 solo, 8 tackle for losses, and 18 quarterback hits. That's what you should expect to see in there. But could you claim that the Buccaneers defense previously had a better front four or front three, how they play, compared to the Bills at the time, that Devin White has been managed to put himself as the best linebacker potentially in the NFL at the moment?
I mean, there's no doubt he's a better player.
Yeah, it's
6 foot 237 is Devin White. Obviously, 6'5", 250 Tremaine Edmonds. So they're supposed to be different on there, but you've got coverage ability with Edmonds because he can go side to side a bit. But Devin White, he's got your all round type linebacker.
The thing that annoys me is that Edmonds has proven that he can do it. His first year, kind of second half of his rookie season, he came on strong. Second season was excellent. Looked like he was going to be this all pro linebacker for us, and so he's just not done it since then. And injuries haven't helped, but he's just not played to a particularly high standard. And I think if he wants to get that deal, he's got to up his game. He's absolutely got to. He's got no excuses. The defense is stacked. We've added a better line. There can be no complaints. He's got to improve this year.
So let's move on. I'm gonna class the cornerbacks and safeties as one defensive back unit.
Secondary.
So last year we had Trey White, Levi Wallace, Jordan Poyer, Saran Neal, Teron Johnson, Jaquan Johnson, Dane Jackson, Micah Hyde, Damar Hamlin, and Cameron Lewis. And obviously this year, before the cuts, obviously, before people say there's more defensive players than there are last year, we've got rookie Christian Benford. We still have Trey White. We have obviously Kyra Lamb. We have Trayvon Fuller, a rookie who signed out of Tulsa. We have Elijah Griffin still there, Nate G's son. Obviously Tim Harris, Jamarcus Ingram, a rookie out of Buffalo. Dane Jackson, Jaquan Johnson, Teron Johnson. Cam Lewis still's there. Nick McLeod, who's come back. Saran Neal, Poyer Hyde. Am I missing anyone else?
Yeah.
Damar Hamlin. I wonder when you're going to get to those guys.
Josh Thomas as well. So, would you say thumbs up, upgrade, thumbs down, or middle of the line for the defensive backs for the secondary?
So this is a tricky one, because I think if you look at the starting four last year, the key guys
pre is, or post Trey White injury.
So start of the season. Your key players are Trey White, Poyer, Wallace, and Hyde. Right, that's your main four.
Yeah.
The start of this year, you're questionable with Tredavious White. He's potentially going to be missing 3-4 weeks of the season anyway. Mm-hmm. And you don't know, when you're off an injury like that, you don't know if you're getting back the same player as he was before the injury.
Yeah.
You've got Kyra Lamb, who, very talented, clearly. I told the world that that's who we were going to predict. Nobody else did. And got him in.
Go back to January.
A voice in the wilderness, I believe it was.
Absolutely was. Yeah. If you recall, Matt had us picking safeties and all kinds of crazy things. But don't worry, the voice of reason came in and said who we're gonna pick.
His
face. I wish you could see his face. It's hilarious.
Keep talking.
But he's as clearly as talented as he is. He's a rookie.
Yes.
So, yeah.
The safeties are a year older. There's potential issues with contracts.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is an area where it is a slight step back. In the as of week one, as it was against week one of last season, purely because there we had a fit and fresh Trey White. We had Levi Wallace coming off a good season, who was about to have another good season. And we had those two safeties. The two safeties, I think, will be fine. And they're an elite group. The corners, I'm a little bit more concerned about, purely because how quickly is Trey White coming back? Is he going to be as good? Is Kyra Lamb going to be the player that we hope he can be?
Yeah. And I'll stick my neck out. I think Kyra Lamb will be, but maybe not this year because he's going to be a rookie and he's, you know, it's a lot to put on his shoulders. Whenever I hear ACL injuries, I don't know, maybe it's just thing. I immediately think in our football of Ruud van Nistelrooy. And I remember he was 23 and a whole career in front of him and he had his ACL. And if I remember rightly, he was out for about a year, but it really wasn't almost another year until he was scoring bags of goals for United. Yeah. It was a long old time. And so I think you've almost got three questions about that secondary. One, when does Trey come back and how good is he going to be? Is he going to be the Trey we know and love? How is Kyra Elam going to be? Do they put too much or do they hope not to put too much on his plate and just let the kid learn? Let the kid learn his craft. He's going into a good secondary. They'll look after him. He'll be fine, but let's not expect too much from him in the first year. Maybe he surprises us, and he's fantastic. And the third one, which I don't think anything will affect Poyer's on field, because I think he's too much of a pro not to.
Mm.
But I just have a bad feeling that Bean does not like players going out talking about, I deserve to be paid. They run a pretty tight ship there and they don't like people going out. But he's got an ever such a slight whiff of, ever so slightly, compared to some of the other egos in the league, it's non-existent. He's got an ever so slightly prima donna thing of, I should be paid this money. Jesus, look at what these other people are earning, you know, kind of thing. I just have a feeling they're a year older, and I just have a feeling they'll get one more year out of Poyer, and he might go. Now, whether that will unsettle the team, I don't think so. But again, you take Trey, perhaps recovering Trey, and a Poyer who leaves after 1 year, and suddenly that secondary doesn't look quite so clever.
Yeah, I think you've also got to put the fact that obviously you've got Teron Johnson in there as
the
best on
and,
there.
And actually he had a very good season last year. I think still you don't realize it, but he quietly started 15 games last season. That's a huge amount. And he shorter guy, but for a fourth round pick, I think he's been quietly really, really good and productive for us. So if he's coming in probably to start with to pick up the slack of Trey White's injury. And then when Trey White gets, when he gets back up to speed, swapping in and out and swapping into positions with Kyra Lamb, I'm quite happy with that. I think that's a kind of a good first reserve or nickelback that is going to serve us well.
So just looking at, obviously, if you kind of weren't on there, would you stick until Trey White come back with the cornerbacks that we're most likely going to be taking, which would be Elam? Obviously, we'll exclude White for the time being. He'll be in the 53-man squad. Elam, Jackson, Johnson, probably Cam Lewis and Saron Neal. Or would you try and kick the tires, even if it's on a vet minimum for the likes of, these are free agents here, Joe Hayden, Chris Harris, Xavier Rose, Jimmy Smith, AJ Bouye, Vernon Hargreaves, or even Mackenzie Alexander? Would you look to bring those, or are you comfortable? This, I think this is what we need to think, and what most people think is, how comfortable are people with this, at least with the cornerback side of the secondary, rather than worry too much about that safety. So would you consider like one of those free agents, or do you think there's enough with Johnson as nickel and Hyde and Poyer covering the middle that you can actually get away with Elam and seventh round Dane Jackson as your starting cornerbacks till Trey White comes back?
I think it will be Taron Johnson and Kyra Lamb starting. I think that the safeties Poyer and Hyde will be okay. I personally think that I think they'll stick with what they've got, unless it's going wrong after like weeks two and three, and then they may have a look to see what free agencies are around just to cover the gap. Yeah. I think I don't think they will go outside of what they've got currently.
Yeah. So shall we quickly just have a quick yes or no to the special teams segment of it? I mean, last year, Reed Ferguson,
the moment you've all been waiting for.
Last year, Tyler Bass, Reed Ferguson, Matt Hawk. This year, Tyler Bass, Reed Ferguson, Matt Hawk slash Matt Erasia. Good or bad? I'm assuming that will be dependent, I guess, on whether Erasia actually gets the job, which, fingers crossed, he does. Hack.
Yeah, Hack is going to be hacking his way to the streets, and I'm fine with that. He didn't have to do a huge amount last year, but when he didn't do it particularly brilliantly. If the footage is to be believed, Erasia is one of the best punter prospects that's ever come out of college. So the good thing about our offense is we're not going to ask him to do a massive amount. So if when he does come in, he can do a vaguely competent job, he's going to be better than Matt Hack. So yeah. It's a step up for me getting it.
My only yes but to that is from what I've seen of OTAs, and it'll be interesting to see what they do in training camp, is that Hack is still doing the holding for the kicking team. And according to all the received wisdom, is when you take the punter, that holder of the kicking team is almost always the punter. And so far it's Matt Hack. Now, I can't believe that either Matt Hack, they'll keep Matt Hack on just to hold a ball, for goodness sake. How hard can that be? And they'll surely, come on, I'll do it.
Pay me 68 grand a year. Sure, and I'll be a holder.
I would do that. I would relocate for 68 grand just to hold the ball on game.
Not a problem.
I can't believe that they'll keep Hack on for that. And I can't believe that they'll keep him over Matt either. It's my only interesting special teams question there, which comes into training camp, which is how's Ariza getting on with the holding? Because I think he'll almost certainly have to do that as well as punting. Mm. The punting, I mean, Jesus, I've seen it. It's, 70 yards, some of them? I mean, that's crazy. If you go three and out on the 25-yard line, they'll be getting it, and it bounces on the 20, and you get a Buffalo bounce. They could be fielding that on the 15. And you went three and out after a touchback. I mean, that's extraordinary to be able to flip the field. They will have to take him. I just hope he cracks the secret mystery of holding the ball.
Catching the ball.
Is it laces in or laces out?
You're right. I was too glib. Yeah, he's got to catch it and put it on
turn
the ground,
it a little bit.
And turn it. No, good point. Very good point.
Very difficult job. It's a very difficult job.
I mean, he can spend 2 hours a day practicing kicking the ball and 5 hours a day practicing catching it and turning it a little bit. You'd think that would be enough.
You really would, wouldn't you?
You would really hope so, right?
So that is our defensive outlook for 2022. Is there anything you guys want to add as a final footnote to the defensive outlook 2022?
I don't think so. I'd like, for me, this is a legendary unit that is getting better. The key thing is, one of the key things is Trey White and the injury, to see how good he comes back. And if he is as good as he was before, the additions that we've made should make this team that was the best defensive unit in the NFL even better. It's basically no way that we can't win the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. I was trying to think, maybe you guys can correct me. I'm trying to think of the last time a team had the number one defense and the number one offense. I think it was Seattle in the 47 season when they absolutely thrashed the Broncos. I think it was 47. Maybe I should have Googled it before the show. But that should be the goal for this season. There's absolutely no excuse not to. We should be the number one in both categories.
And considering we had the best defense in the NFL last year, we had a very round number that made of those players that made it to the Pro Bowl, if you remember. A fat zero made the Pro Bowl.
It's a goddamn beauty. It's a goddamn beauty contest, isn't it?
Oh, it's ridiculous.
People voting for their mates, isn't it? It's just
long may it continue that this defense is underrated and underappreciated, because I think that only adds fuel to their fire.
Yeah. Do you want to know the last team? To have the ranked number one offense and defense was the 2010 San Diego Chargers.
Oh.
First team to do so since the 1996 Green Bay Packers.
Oh, wow, golly. Okay. I guess that's a bit of a bad omen then, because the Chargers went out in, I think, the wild card round, didn't they, that year?
Yeah.
The
first time since, where's the... Okay, I don't know what the Packers did that season in 96. Did the Packers win it that year?
It sounds about then. I always get the years wrong because the Super Bowl is obviously in the following year, isn't it? But the thingy went in 97, Broncos did in 97 and 98, I think. So the Packers won the year before, because they won the year after.
The Packers, 1996, Packers, yeah, number one ranked offense and defense, and won the Super Bowl, beating
that
the
was, yeah, that, say that.
Was that the there was the Patriots, wasn't it? The Brett Favre, the great Brett Favre team, yeah.
Yeah, so... There is one team at least that had both. So it's a mixed when it comes to the omen regarding number one ranked offense and defense and where they finish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the 2022 preview done. We'll start sort of previewing the training camps. We'll have our team opponent previews coming up, which will probably be a straight to YouTube feature. So we've got some good guests. So if we know any Chiefs, Bengals, who else did I say earlier? Vikings and Bears fans. If you know any of them, just point them our way. We've got some good guests lined up for the other teams so far. Obviously, another reminder that there is a meetup at the Fitzrover on the 31st of July, organized by Charlie from our sister podcast, Bills from Afar podcast. And all I can say is keep following us on all socials. So UK_Bills on Twitter and Instagram, Red and White and RWBB_podcast on Twitter, Buffalo Bills UK on YouTube and Facebook. Follow Mark at
This is Sparky S.
Follow Robin at
Robin C. Armstrong.
And follow me.
Don't forget that C.
Oh, there you go. So I had to track down the other Robin Armstrong. Yeah. That's what the team for my middle name, because Robin Armstrong was taken.
Is there like A and B have already gone, right?
Yeah. Well, no, C was just my middle initial, so it made sense.
I got that. That was a joke.
And you can follow me at MattSW86. So thank you for subscribing, for whatever social, whatever podcast platform you actually listen to us on. And we are now on Amazon Music, which is good. Although Alexa still can't play us on when you actually ask her to do it. But we're on there. We're on all your favorite podcasts. So keep subscribing and following. And for Robin, Mark, Matt saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening. And let's go, Buffalo Bills.
Go, Bills.
Yeah,
no,
you don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work.
No.
Huh? That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three.